Blog Talk Radio.
Less Detail, the podcast. On a Thursday night, July 31st, 2014, I'm Dre, he's Jay. The offseason is over. Football has started. The camps are opening up. Guys are popping their ACLs left and right. Injuries are happening already. Jason, you know football season is starting when season-ending injuries are occurring and when the police blotter is starting to fill up.
It's good to be back. Isn't it great to be back? I mean, we had the off-season portion of the show. We actually did more shows than I thought we would during the off-season with the eloquent, open-mouth, say-shit podcast, which was very football-free, for the most part, fairly football-free, other than a couple of shows around the draft, and other than, you know, little news snippets here or there. But it was a relatively light football show theme during the summertime. It kind of gave us a chance to detox, but we are back now. This is our Hall of Fame, Hall of Infamy preview show. You get the honors this year of doing the fourth annual Hall of Fame inductions. We do alternate. I did the first year, and you did the year two, and I did year three. We kind of came up with this, I don't know, kind of on the fly after our first year of the podcast, just sort of an amusing way.
The first year of the blog.
Because what we're doing is we're really making fun of the ridiculousness of all the real Hall of Fames, but then we're also saying, well, is fame necessarily something because you're a good player? You can be famous for something or infamous for something. Doesn't mean you had to be a good player. So we have a very tongue-in-cheek attitude towards our Hall of Fame. So there is definitely some fame associated to it, but there's also a lot of infamy associated with it. And few criteria. The first time I actually have them all spelled out here, the first time I went through and did the first round of inductions, had a few criteria. So we do have rules. And here they are. Number one, who we induct into the Hall of Infamy or Hall of Fame cannot be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Number two, they can't even be close currently to somebody we would even think of, you know, going to the Hall of Fame. So Tom Brady is not going to be in the Hall of Infamy. Now, if Tom Brady goes on a murder rampage like Aaron Hernandez, maybe, you know, but most likely he's not going to be in our Hall of Fame or Hall of Infamy. He's a good player, and he'll get his day in Canton.
Pulled an OJ or something like that, then we would probably induct the murder weapon or something like that.
Yeah, or, you know, Al Cowlings.
yes.
We're driving the white Bronco, or we might just put the Bronco in. That's the other thing about our Hall of Fame, is it's not necessarily limited to people. Things,
yes.
Items, places can also make it into the Hall of Fame. It must be famous for something. That's right. Ghosts. Like, we have a ghost in the Hall of Fame. Stats are not really any indication in this, or, you know, anything that the general Hall of Fame would consider. You know, your yards per attempt over a certain, like Terrell Davis, you know, made it in because of four good years or something like that. Fine. And number four, it's our Hall of Fame, so if you don't like it, yeah, you can fuck off. But that's it.
Very eloquently put.
Thank you. Thank you. Not the way I wrote it the first time, but I wanted to add a little flair to that. So we're here basically today to just talk about the past 3 years. For anybody who's a listener of the podcast who hasn't really visited the blog, now's a good chance to do so. These are all on there.
Right, we started this after the
blogspot.com. I'll get the plug in there really early since this is themed off of our blog.
Yes, we started this after the first year of our blog 4 years ago. So this induction coming up will be the fourth annual induction. That induction ceremony, by the way, will be taking place live Sunday night, August the 3rd, at the same time, 10 p.m. Central. The induction will be done. This is our first year of the podcast and the Hall of Infamy induction. Last year, we started our podcast a few weeks after the Hall of Infamy induction. So this year will be the first year we get to do both at the same time. So since it's my turn, I'm going to do it a little special. I've already got the induction ready to go on the blog, but it's not up yet. It's scheduled to go live at this very same time at 10 o'clock Central Time, Sunday night, August the 3rd. So you'll be able to read the induction, but only after the podcast starts live at 10 p.m. Central. So I'm getting choked up about it. So Jason does not know my five entrants this year. He'll get to listen and learn those inductees live, as will all of you listening live Sunday night, 10 p.m. Central. And then you can go to the blog and read the inductions. They're right there, enshrined forever, permanently on the blog, just like our previous inductees, which we are going to talk about a little bit tonight.
And there are 20 of them. So these will be inductees number 21 through 25 on this list. So it'll be, I'm sure you've got some good things. And the beauty of this Hall of Fame is that there is no shelf life. This doesn't have to be something, you have to wait your 5 years to get in. It can be relatively fresh in the mind, but it's got to be worthy. And I think that's the most important thing. So because there's just so much out there, we've primarily focused on memories and things from over the years. And I'm sure we've both got our favorites. And we're here to do some recap tonight of the previous year's entries. I guess we'll start with you. Anyone jump out? Any favorites? Because there's 20 of them. There's probably a good chance we're not going to get to talk to them about in detail about all 20 of them right now. But what jumps out to you? Who jumps out to you and just or popped into your mind and you were like, you had that aha moment, like, this is a Hall of Famer for our purposes?
Fitting your sense of humor and personality perfectly is your first year of having inductions. You did the first 10 3 years ago in 2011, and you inducted a ghost as part of your inductees, the ghost of Sean Taylor. If you remember, the Washington Redskins all-pro safety was gunned down at his own doorstep. You had to induct the ghost of Sean Taylor because of something special that the Redskins decided to do for the ghost of Sean Taylor.
Yeah, I don't think this has crept into our show as many times as it's crept into our personal conversations, but we have over the years joked, and not at Sean Taylor's expense. I don't think we're not making fun of Sean Taylor, so I don't want people to think we're making fun of the dead guy here. Because that was tragic. And that was horrible, and that was tragic. And I've got, a sense of humor that is weird sometimes, but we're not making fun of the murder or the guy who got killed.
Sean Taylor wouldn't have been inducted just for getting killed. This was for something that happened after that.
Right. So the Redskins and Joe Gibbs and whoever came up with this, I have no idea, decided to honor Sean Taylor in their first, in the game, the game right after this happened, by coming out with nobody playing Sean Taylor's position. Just 10 guys on the field. So they're playing the Buffalo Bills. So, the other team, they're paid professionals. You see 10 guys on the field, and you don't know or care why there are 10 guys on the field. Even if you know there's a reason why there's 10 guys out there, what are you going to do?
You're going to take advantage of the fact that there's only 10 guys on defense.
That's correct. And they basically just ran off a huge chunk of yard right to the spot and the side of the field where, oh, yeah, the big hitting strong safety would have been to blow up the hole. And that it set the tone for the whole game. And it's just the dumbest decision. I remember writing this and thinking, what if Sean Taylor was the quarterback? Would they have just snapped the ball into the backfield and let the ball roll around for a while? Or if he was the running back, turn around and just drop the ball? I mean, this was so dumb and so poorly thought out. The best thing you could have gone out there to do to honor this guy was go out there and jack some people up and win the game. And they totally
what a hell of an idea.
To the point where Joe Gibbs lost the game as well, getting a personal foul penalty called against him for calling back-to-back timeouts. And that's a huge no-no. That's unsportsmanlike. And then it knocks him out of field goal. And just the whole thing was a mess. And that play, in essence, we always joked about Sean Taylor or his ghost or his corpse basically just spinning uncontrollably in his grave over one of the most ridiculous things we've ever seen. And this is supposed to be honoring the player. And I just remember all the press and publicity after that was just, it wasn't about honoring the guy at all. It was about how did they fuck this up so bad? And that's really what it was all about. So that's how a ghost was the, I believe, the final entrant into the first round of inductions in the Hall of Fame. Sad, but that happened. That's true. People, you can look it up. This thing really happened. I don't think the NFL is putting this on any of their highlight reels, but this really happened.
It's sad, but it's infamous, and that's why it's in the Hall of Infamy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be it doesn't even have to be a good thing or a funny thing. You know, to transition, I hit a bit of a somber note my second time through when I put Daryl Stingley in there. And there's nothing funny about that. You can't write any ha-ha, tongue-in-cheek, hey, let me write a joke about this guy. This guy, his life, his career, everything basically just came to a halt because he just got basically speared. And then if that happened today, could you imagine if that happened right now? What would have happened to the Jack Tatum role? I mean, the guy'd be suspended. He'd be all kinds of crazy. So he'd be fined millions of dollars. But yeah, Daryl Stingley back was at 79.
77, I believe.
Years right here, 77. Got it. Double check here. I want to have things right. Yes, 77. Preseason game too. That's even better. Preseason game. I don't think a lot of people remember that because we're talking. I was one in 1977, so I did not see this happen. But that was one of the more somber notes that we hit. But I wanted to bring it up because I don't want everyone to think that this is just all, ha ha. Look at me. We're having fun with this. It's famous and. Daryl Stingley's never going to be in the real Hall of Fame, but it's definitely famous and infamous at the same time.
Yes, he earned a spot in the Hall of Infamy for having one of the most infamous plays in NFL history, but like you said, they're never going to honor that or recognize that in the actual Hall of Fame because that's not something they want to necessarily shine a spotlight on, but it does deserve recognition and a spotlight for having such impact on the game of football and, on the NFL. And it's just something, that you think about just about every time you watch a football game, when you see someone get lit up and they don't necessarily get up, you're thinking concussions and you're also thinking, depending on where he got hit, if he gets hit like in the spinal area, in the back or in the lower body somewhere and he just kind of goes limp, the first thing you're thinking is, oh, Jesus, is this another, paralyzed situation? Are they going to have to cart him off the field? Is he going to, kind of have to do the Mike Utley thumbs up thing or, what have you? Because it just makes you think, and think of Daryl Stingley. You think of how his life was changed forever and think of Jack Tatum unrepentant to the end. And, boy, that's just, I guess that's how football was played back then. But, yeah, one of the most infamous moments in history in which definitely thought it needed to be recognized.
Well, I'll switch tone here. Let's get a little lighter now. You did have the honor in your year of putting inanimate objects into the Hall of Infamy.
Yeah, I called it Brett Favre's Unholy Trinity because Brett Favre himself, of course, is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He is definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. There's no denying what he did on the football field. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. He definitely did it in an unconventional manner, but the fact is he put up unbelievable numbers. He won a ring, and he was just a terror on the field. And what I decided to do was induct three items that showed what kind of a terror he was off the field, because he had such a sterling reputation. Everyone seemed to fall in love with Brett Favre, kind of had the little bit of a Johnny Football in him. You know, he was this swaggering guy, and he just had his cockiness, and he's just devil-may-care and the gunslinger and all of this stuff. And, you know, it's easy to make me sick to my stomach when you start hyping somebody up through the media, you know, as somebody who's just, he's just so badass. He's John Wayne. He's this, he's that. So when it came out that as a member of the New York Jets, he decided that while his wife was in the hospital fighting cancer, he decided that he needed some loving of his own and he needed some attention of his own. So the Jets sideline Trixie named Jen Sturger, who I knew who she was only because I had a subscription to Playboy magazine at the time, and she showed up in Playboy from her days at Florida State University. Someone took a random picture of her, and she was that damn hot that just that picture of her sitting at a football game, you know, clothed, but, you know, dressed sexy and looking as only she can look. Basically, she parlayed that into a spread in Playboy and into some fame and notoriety of her own and into that Jets job as a sideline reporter. And Brett Favre liked what he saw, too. And he had an interesting way of deciding to let Ms. Sturger know that he was interested in her. He decided to take cell phone pictures of his little Wrangler and send these pictures of his junk to Ms. Sturger. Well, I decided to induct his cell phone, which had his Mississippi phone number just blatantly displayed when it went through to Jen Sturger. No hiding it, no hiding who he was, no trying to cover anything up. He's not smart enough to do any of that. So I inducted his cell phone. I inducted his Crocs, the wonderful footwear that certain people like to wear, certain people who have no taste. His Crocs were prominently displayed there below his little Wrangler so that you could identify who he was. Now, a lot of people wear Crocs, so it's not necessarily a big, you know, identifying marker, but the fact was it was his. There were his Crocs. He was just walking around wearing them, the same ones, the same shoes. He didn't care. He wasn't trying to hide that either. And then the big telltale sign, the third item in the Holy Trinity that I inducted, was his wristwatch. Now, that was distinguishable. This wasn't just any old wristwatch. His first retirement press conference, when he was with the Green Bay Packers, he couldn't decide what he wanted to do. Did he want to quit? Did he want to come back? When he's sitting up there in tears crying, it's the same damn wristwatch. This idiot didn't have the sense to take off his wristwatch when he's sending pictures of his dick to this complete stranger. And I just had to induct those three items, you know, carefully with rubber gloves on. I didn't want to touch any of that shit, but I just thought it was a perfect window into the soul, into the world of Brett Favre to show who he really is. He's got the Wrangler ass, he got the gunslinger thing, but those three items showed exactly what he was made of.
Yeah, that was well done, because like you said, the man himself, he's in, he's first ballot, he's no problem, but yeah, you gotta remember at least the instance. So that was an interesting way of getting around the rules. I applauded that.
Thank you. I was trying to be creative.
One of the things that we do highlight we highlight some race issues on this show sometimes. You know, we're probably a little more open about those things than if you just go to any old random radio show. We hit them up pretty hard, but both of my times through the list, I caught a couple of them, and then I'm sure we'll catch more. But I'm sure you can talk about these gentlemen because I inducted them both. But I'm talking, of course, about Rush Limbaugh and his media desirousness and the sort of the forebearer of what we do, Jimmy the Greek.
That's right. Two guys in the media that just decided, you know, they knew they were watching a sport with mostly black guys running around out there, but they just decided, you know, they needed to. There's something missing from media coverage of these black guys. They needed some crazy right wing racist white guys' opinions injected into this stuff. So Rush Limbaugh decided when he got his gig with ESPN in 2003 that he needed to go on a rant to talk about how the media was desirous to have a black quarterback succeed. So that's why they were behind Donovan McNabb and the Philadelphia Eagles. That's why the media was rooting him on. Never mind that he was a black quarterback, you know, but he was a quarterback. He was playing football, and there was really no reason to like or dislike him based on his race. We had already moved way past the black quarterback thing at that point in society, at least I thought we had. And here's Rush Limbaugh coming along like it's the 60s or the 70s, and that, you know, we need to question this guy just because he happens to be black and playing the quarterback position, and we need to figure out if that's something that he could do. It had been, at that point, you know, 16 years since Doug Williams had won the Super Bowl for the Washington Redskins as a black quarterback. And here's Rush Limbaugh sitting up there 16 years later in 2003 acting like it's still this unbelievable thing, this exotic thing that there's a black man back there playing quarterback. So that was just crazy. So he earned his spot that you gave him. And then Jimmy the Greek went on this bizarre screed. Jimmy the Greek, if you're younger than 30-some years old, you've never even heard of the guy. CBS had during their pregame show, back when the pregame show only lasted a half hour, you know how old we are that we remember these days when the pregame show started.
Not the 3-hour pregame show. We're talking 11:30 Central NFL Today,
right?
With the cheesy computer graphic guy.
Central.
Yeah.
That's right. And they took some of that precious time, that precious 30 minutes of pregame, to give some time to Jimmy the Greek, who was a guy who went through the point spreads. This is also back before the NFL started having a real problem with all the gambling, even though we know that gambling is a humongous part of the NFL. But he was the guy to go to for your spread picks, your picks against the point spread. And so he basically was doing what we were doing. He was looking at the games not from a straight-up standpoint, but looking at them against the point spread and telling you who you should pick and who you should not pick. So he was definitely a forebearer for what we're doing. But he went on a bizarre rant at one point during his reign in the 80s about the black athlete and how the slaves were bred so that the big black slave would breed with a big black female and have a big black kid, and they could go out and dominate the world because they were big and black. And it was just the craziest rant you've ever heard. And this was on television. It was just bizarre that he went into this rant and nobody knew what he was talking about. And, you know, obviously after that he got fired and you never really heard from him again. But, yeah, he earned his spot in infamy because – when you bring up the name Jimmy the Greek nowadays, you get the same reaction from everybody, which is just slack-jawed disbelief that he could say some of the things that he said.
Yeah, and you know, and that was in the 80s, and that got him fired. I mean, right now, that'd probably get him shot live on camera. You know, and I think we've come a long way through this. I mean, what was, I think, some of the most refreshing things for me was that we had Russell Wilson, black quarterback, win this last Super Bowl, and very little of the coverage had anything to do with the fact that this kid was black, that he's good, you know, and the team is good. Had very little. I did not hear much at all with the race, and it was, and that's when you know you've made some progress, is when you don't have to bring it up. You don't have to talk about it. If you got to talk about it, it's like, ah, you know, I didn't need it, and I didn't hear it, and it was refreshing. And it was, I'm glad that maybe some progress is being made.
It is. That's actually a very interesting conversation that we don't have time to have tonight. But the contrast between Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick, because you still get a little bit of that with Colin Kaepernick, but it's because he's got tattoos, and that somehow makes him this big, scary athlete that we don't know what he's all about, because he has a lot of tattoos on his arm and some. And Russell Wilson, of course, is just Mr. Milquetoast, and everything's la-di-da happy with him. He's just a perfect role model. I don't think race gets brought up with him because, I don't know, maybe he's acting white enough for the media these days. I don't know. But, yeah, that's a whole other topic altogether.
there's a couple things I want to talk about in the VIP after show, mainly that we are not afraid to put in kickers. We have a kicker and a punter in the Hall of Infamy, and that we put referees in, too. We love us some refs. But while we're still in the live portion of the show, I wanted to pick on a little bit of the depravity that we've put into the Hall of Infamy. And the two guys that jump out to me the most are Eugene Robinson, Man of the Year, and Bryant McKinney. And I'll let you talk about McKinney, because every time you get to talk about Bryant McKinney, it's gold. I can describe what he did, but it just seems to hit such a chord with you. Real quick, though, on Eugene Robinson, Atlanta Falcons safety, decides after winning, I believe it was Christian Man of the Year award, the night before the Super Bowl, decides what better way to celebrate my being the Christian Man of the Year than to go try to hire a hooker, who then turns out to be an undercover cop, and you get arrested the night before the Super Bowl, Man of the Year award and all, and then the next day your team goes and gets blowed out in the Super Bowl. Yeah, that's going to get you in every time. But I'd love to hear a few minutes from you on your boy Bryant McKinney.
That sex boat, oh. You said it in your induction that you could induct somebody from the sex boat every year. That Minnesota Vikings cruise that I don't even, still to this day, I don't know exactly what they were trying to do. They decided the strip club wasn't enough for them. This is back in the late 2000s or early 2010s. I'm not even sure when. But it was around in the Dante Culpepper era. And he was on that cruise as well. They just decided that the strip club wasn't dirty and disgusting enough, so they needed to take a bunch of strippers and rent a boat up in Minnesota and go out and have a sex party on this big boat. And Bryant McKinney earned his spot in the Hall of Infamy because of all the disgusting, of all the dirty things that people were doing on this sex boat. The police report said that Bryant McKinney specifically was busted performing oral sex on one of the prostitutes on the boat. What kind of man puts his face in between the legs of a prostitute?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you trying to pick up diseases? What are you doing?
He just wants to please the ladies.
Yeah, there's other ways to do that. There's many other ways to do that. So, yes, Bryant McKinney, as infamous as it gets. So we are out of time on the live show. Our after show, as you should know by now, is available on iTunes if you search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, or on the archive page here where you're listening live at blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. More after this break. We'll be right back. brings us into our VIP after show, 15 minutes of after talk, and we're going to talk more about our Hall of Fame, Hall of Infamy inductions. We've got punters to get to, we've got kickers to get to, and Jason, what else has stood out in your mind in our inductions over the years?
Well, the two referees that made it in, a lot of people don't give a lot of, you know, a lot of run to the poor zebras, to the guys in stripes. I have a feeling we may have a little more run on this with the replacement refs here in our future. There's definitely some gold to be mined from that situation, but the we have one sort of funny inductee who you put in 2012 was Ben Dreis for the giving them the business down there, quote. And it's funny because I was reading through and your description and you went through about how famous this is. People have even done callbacks to this, but for me, the most famous part of the whole giving them the business was when it made it into Madden. Where in the old versions of Madden, you know, PlayStation 1, early PlayStation 2 type days, where if you went and hit the quarterback too late, the ref would come out and actually make the call that you were giving them the business. So if you were doing the unsportsmanlike stuff after the plays, that was the call that was made, giving them the business. So when you've got something that transcends the media into the world of video gaming and Madden, you've done something special. When would you basically come out there to make a call on a guy? And what happened was just, the guy's basically just, like you described, he's just basically punching Jim Kelly on the ground after the play. And the only way the ref could describe the flag was he's giving him the business down there. And it's awesome. And that sort of high-pitched, twangy voice, I mean, we can all remember, hey, giving him the business down there. And just awesome. The referee that I put in, though, was Phil Luckett, who's been sort of the thorn in your side. Few reasons, mainly being the Music City Miracle. And we've not nearly talked enough about the Music City Miracle on our show, but that was, I believe, back when you were doing the show, and we weren't doing the show, but we were doing the picks on paper, first time you ever had to change a pick, that you had actually X'd me out with Tennessee and circled yourself for Buffalo because game's over. They're just going to do a cheap kickoff here to run out the clock. What could possibly go wrong? And then the Music City Miracle happens. So I was able to get Phil Luckett into the Hall of Fame, and Kevin Dyson made it in my second time through for being the guy to run the ball back in the Music City Miracle and then turn around and be the guy who got stopped like 6 inches short of the goal line in the Super Bowl against the Titans. Well, against the Rams that year for the Titans. But Phil Luckett, what a rough streak of luck that guy has. Music City Miracle, Vinny Testaverde's, we thought his head was the ball game, which you and I have also talked about a lot over the years. Broke up a play, got in the way of a receiver running downfield on a wide open touchdown, basically just broke up the pass just by standing there. And then I had to give him an addendum this last time through because he's the guy in the booth overseeing the instant replay for the Seattle Green Bay Hail Mary immaculate interception. I mean, how much can you screw up as a referee and still have a job? And we will even put in the refs.
Yeah, Phil Luckett definitely deserves to be put in because he must have pictures of somebody. I don't know how he still has a job after all these years. I really don't. And that Music City Miracle was still a four pass.
you're going to your grave. Is that going to be on your tombstone?
It was a forward pass. That's going to be on.
It was a forward. Yeah, here lies Andre Ross. It was a forward pass.
That's right.
And it was like, what? Don't worry about it. I'll understand. But yeah, I remember the play is funny because that's such a famous moment that you had called me to gloat, I believe, about winning that pick. Because there was a little backstory with that, you know, the Doug Flutie, Rob Johnson thing, and Flutie had won all the games for Buffalo, and then was it Wade Phillips decides he's going to have Rob Johnson start because he was coming back from injury. Rob Johnson did everything possible to win that game. Has the lead late. You call me up, ha-ha, look at that. I picked Buffalo, suck it. Rob Johnson's going to win this game. You get off the phone with me, and I'm defeated, and then you call me back as soon as the Music City Miracle happens, and I don't even say hello. I just pick up the phone, and you go, that was a forward pass.
That was a forward pass.
That's a forward pass.
Nope.
It's a forward pass. Every time they show a replay, it's a forward pass. And then it comes back, and, of course, it's touchdown, and the whiteout got pulled out for the very first time. Such a huge moment even in our history of doing what we do that just a pick just had to change. I think that only happened one other time. I can't remember the game exactly, but some bullshit touchdown happened, and the other team was so mad they didn't come out for the extra point. So the
That's
team
right.
ran it in for two, and the other team ran it in for a two-point conversion and actually blew the spread because of that.
That's right. They got the. I don't remember the teams, but they got the touchdown to officially tie it so that the
right.
extra point would have, with no time left, the extra point would have given them the one-point victory.
Right.
They were one-and-a-half-point favorites, but the other
yeah.
team was so pissed from giving up the touchdown that they just left the field. So the team that scored the touchdown said, well, we're going to take the two-point conversion because there's no defense out here, therefore winning the game by two and covering a one-and-a-half-point spread. Yeah.
Just ridiculous.
So I really need to look that game up because that's pretty infamous, too. Whoever did that needs to be inducted as well.
And you got me on that one because I had the team that decided not to show up. So
right.
it was sort of a little bit of payback. So we got about seven, eight minutes left here to go through some of our other ones. Anybody else jump out there?
I could induct a member of the 1985 Chicago Bears every year because that team, me being from Chicago, is so big in my heart. I still have fond memories of them. There's few guys from that team that have been inducted already, but there's some that still are infamous and will never see the Hall of Fame, but are still very infamous in Chicago and around the world. And I decided to induct one of them when I had the chance a couple of years ago, and that would be William the Refrigerator Perry. This guy was, again, if you're under the age of 30, you might not know who he is, but he was huge. And I mean, in every sense of the word, he was big and fat, but by today's standards of an NFL defensive lineman, he wasn't that big. He was about 300 pounds, but back then, that was about 30 pounds over the average defensive lineman. Nowadays, that would be, you know, pretty much average. But back then, he was a big 300-pound defensive lineman. He was country as hell, from South Carolina, I believe. He had a brother that actually played in the NFL as well named Michael Dean Perry. But William the Refrigerator Perry is big. He was country. He had an egomaniac head coach in Mike Ditka who every time anyone on his team got famous, he got a little more famous. So he was all for allowing these personalities to be who they wanted to be, such as the punky QB Jim McMahon, such as Samurai Mike Singletary and, you know, Walter Sweetness Payton. There's so many huge personalities on his team. But Fridge Perry wasn't exactly outgoing, but he was kind of sweet and cuddly and had the country accent. And, you know, you couldn't help but like the guy. And then Coach Ditka decided that he needed to put Perry in the game as a lead fullback, sort of a circus stunt almost. And that led to Perry getting a couple of goal line carries as a running back or as an up back, and him being again 300 pounds, which at that time in the mid 80s was abnormally big. They couldn't stop him. I believe he scored, if not every time he got a goal line carry, almost every time he got a goal line carry. I believe he scored a touchdown. And in Super Bowl 20, the big 46-10 rout that the Bears laid on the New England Patriots, the Hall of Fame running back, Walter Sweetness Payton, did not get a touchdown carry. But guess who did? That's right, William the Refrigerator Perry. And you can still see that white uniform barreling through the New England defensive line, and you can still see him winding up and rumbling, getting ready to spike the ball after the touchdown. His belly is swaying around, and he finally falls forward and spikes the ball, and he almost fell on his ass because he was so uncoordinated. But, yeah, William Perry is about as infamous as he gets off of that 85 team, because there was nobody like him. He was so unique in being so – he was just himself. He couldn't help but be himself. That's all he could be. And yet he was taken advantage of and exploited by pretty much everybody that came his way, endorsers and, of course, Coach Ditka. He was just there to be loved and used and abused. And I think now he's like dirt poor and back in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, he's driving a pickup truck. But he'll always be the fridge, you know, and that's the thing.
Yep.
And, you know, outside of Chicago, I mean, this was a very quick, you know, rise to fame and then a very quick fall from fame. I mean, it was quick and it was just this meteoric rise. And then for basically a player that wasn't the best player. And that's kind of what ends up catching up to you. He was kind of like the William Hung of the Bears team. You know, he only played
about 5 years or something like that.
Wasn't the best player, but he had that whole 85 Bears. You know, I have my connection to the 85 Bears is I get to say I flipped burgers at McDonald's with Dave Dorson. Not a lot of people can say.
Wow.
That. He was buying a franchise, and he got sent to my store when I was in high school to train. And the weirdest feeling ever is I'm working the grill at McDonald's in high school with Dave Dorson. Very strange.
Definitely not something a lot of people can say.
Yeah. No, not a lot. And I want to get in real quick because I know the show's almost over. But this one went quick.
Yeah.
The two people that I put in for quotes, you know, because you don't have to be famous for anything. Just say something really ridiculous. The first one, of course, was Freddie Mitchell, who has probably still to this day the best football quote I've ever heard, because it was so, like, self-aggrandizing. It just, look at me, and this guy wasn't very good at all. But catches, he caught the 4th and 26, I believe, which is huge up here. Don't say 4th and 26 in Wisconsin. Just, you know, just saying. But he caught that 4th and 26 pass to, you know, beat the Packers. And then after the game, and this guy's just a complete piece of shit as a player. I just want to thank my hands for being so great. It's still one of the funniest, most ridiculous quotes ever from anybody, especially considering this guy's no good. Jerry Rice didn't say that.
Now, that's got to go on his tombstone.
I just want to thank my hands for being so great. And, of course, the other one was your favorite. I'll give you this one to finish up. Your favorite publicist, who you even forgot about, and this was always the one you jumped out at, was Terrell Owens' publicist. I believe Etheridge was the last name. Possibly one of the creepiest quotes ever, with like big implications, but just how dumb can you be to say what she said?
People wondering why Terrell Owens was rumored to have suicidal tendencies. And her response to that when asked about it on camera for everybody to hear was, well, he's got 25 million reasons why he wouldn't do that. And that is, of course, referring to a contract that he had just signed. So remember that, folks. If you're ever feeling like you want to kill yourself, just think about all the money that you might be missing out on if you do that. Because as we know, that's way more important than life.
And someone of his stature would never do that.
So we're going to end it there because you can't really get more perfect there. Like we said, the Hall of Infamy is up on our football blog. That's in much less detail.blogspot.com to read our inductions. And Sunday night, new